Hello and welcome to the Art Department Podcast, episode 23, with me, Jan Orschel, in Singapore and in San Francisco, locked down still, Emmanuel Xu. And this is kind of a wrap-up episode for what has been a bit of a crazy year for, I think, everybody, and us included. So, and on top of that, it's kind of the start of a new format we wanted to try out, which is kind of like a monthly review where we go over whatever happened in the entertainment industry, whatever touches us, maybe directly or indirectly, and what we thought would be an interesting topic to talk about with everyone. So yeah, this is kind of like a dual, like December wrap up and also a 2020 wrap up, just coincidentally. So we have been looking at the news and we've picked up a few interesting topics that have happened. So we'll go through them however we feel. It's not nothing serious, and we'll see wherever our discussions will be taking us. And if you like this format, let us know. If you really hate it, then let us also know, maybe.
Yeah, let us know.
So write in the comments and shoot us an email. We're always happy to respond. So I think one of the big things that was kind of very symptomatic for the entire year, and which also caused a lot of discussion, I think, was the whole cinema closure topic, and there are a lot of, I think, theater chains around the world, especially in the US and UK, which are in financial difficulties, like AMC, to name one. And to kind of top it off towards the end of the year, Warner, which also owns the new streaming service HBO Max, kind of announced that they want to release all of the big 2021 movies that were on the release calendar simultaneously on HBO Max. I mean, it only, I think, affects the US because HBO Max is only available in the US as far as I know. But so...
Do you have that in
Singapore? No, we don't. We here only have Netflix. And we have like HBO Asia or something like that's really watered down. And but we're getting Disney Plus next year, February. So that's like a big thing here. But yeah, I mean, there's also one movie that you worked on, which is The Matrix 4, which is, I think, slated for December next year. And I don't know, what do you think about that? Is it like the end of cinema as we know it, kind of all doom and gloom? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, I read a lot of articles, you know, also by some directors, and they were just talking about how, you know, the new theater format, it could be a new theater format, you know, once the pandemic ends, where, you know, a lot of movies play for longer, but it's a higher price kind of thing. I mean, you know, there were some directors who were talking that maybe that's the way it's going. Mm-hmm. But I think when it comes to the Warner Brother stuff, it was pretty shocking, I think. I think it's starting with Wonder Woman. So basically Wonder Woman is going to be on HBO
on Christmas Day,
Max. Yeah. And so, you know, we get it. Pandemic times, you know, don't go to a theater. Mm-hmm. Understood. But the fact that they're releasing like Dune and Matrix and, you know, a whole bunch of other ones on at the same simultaneous release, I think a lot of directors are actually quite unhappy because it's not their vision for the film.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So Denis Villeneuve and have been saying that it's, you know, Christopher Nolan as well has been saying that, hey, look, you know, this is not the format, this is not the art form we want.
Exactly.
And right now people are going, well, you know, if there's no theaters, you know, if AMC goes bankrupt and other theaters follow, then who's going to buy them up? And will it be owned by studios again?
That is a good question. Yeah.
You know, because if it is, then the movies will play longer and it'll be just a slate of movies from those studios. So there's a lot of different things. But I mean, personally, I think I don't know.
Do you go to the theater a lot?
So, yeah, I was going to say, I mean, to be completely honest, I don't go to the theater more than 3 times a year. Mm-hmm. And it had to be, you know, it's pretty much like a date night kind of thing.
Yeah,
that's why I go. And not so much like, this movie has to be seen in the theaters, kind of thing, you know. And I don't know. Does that? I don't know. Am I bad?
No. I'm exactly the same. I mean, for me, the added difficulty is that I have kids, right? So, and when you have kids, and they're still too young to actually go to the cinema with us, even if it's for a kids movie, which is in the coming years, it's primarily what I'm gonna watch, kids movies. Yeah. But I mean, honestly, like the last couple of times I was in the cinema, I can over the last couple of years, I can probably count on one hand. And on top of that, every single time I was really disappointed. So the last couple of movies I saw were like, there was Tenet. That was the last one.
Oh, did you see that in a theater? Movie theater. Oh,
and, okay. Which was quite disappointing. So Nolan is one of the big ones to say like, okay, like this movie has to be experienced in the cinema. And I'm like, okay, yeah. It's loud. I can't understand a thing, but for sure the IMAX helps. And then there was
just a quick segue on that. Because you're talking about Tenet, I'm still confused.
Yeah.
And I watch like 4 YouTube explaining videos.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, it's a weird thing. So there's the thing that I only go to the cinema if I feel really it's worth it. Even though for the last couple of times, like it was always like, I mean, I'm not a big fan of Blade Runner. That was a big letdown. What I really was happy about was Parasite, the Korean movie that ended up getting the Oscars. That I was very happy about. But other than that, it's really hard to actually go to the effort to actually like go to the theater and experience something interesting, right? So that is one for me. And then, I mean, I don't know how I think about the whole thing. Like, on the one hand, I'm really tired of all these sequels and superhero movies. I don't watch them anyway in the cinema. I understand it's a big moneymaker. It's the biggest moneymaker for the studios. But I don't know. I'm hoping secretly that this whole thing and a different kind of... The way that they generate income is going to be different in the future, and that it will kind of trigger hopefully a rethinking of what kind of content to produce and to release. There's Netflix, right? And I do watch a lot of it, but I'm mostly interested in I don't know, the TV productions and stuff like that. When I look at the stuff that Netflix does for Netflix, like their kind of releases in terms of movies, I feel very conflicted about that. I mean, there was the big one from Martin Scorsese, the Irishman, which I found incredibly boring. Just now, I watched the new David Fincher movie, The Mank, which was, I thought, completely underwhelming. They always have these Oscar contenders kind of thing, and I don't feel like they have the same kind of magic that these kind of movies had in the cinema. The thing is, I don't know, like, is it because it says a Netflix original movie, or is it because I watch it for the first time at home, or is it that really the quality of those movies is just not there? I really don't know.
It's so funny hearing you say all this, because usually I'm the grumpy one.
No, I don't want to...
You know, I get it.
I don't want to be... there's plenty of awesome stuff on Netflix, like... But I'm feeling like maybe it's time for a different format. Maybe the 2-hour kind of cinema experience thing is really in question. And I think it has been in question even before the pandemic. Like I enjoy a lot more kind of longer forms of storytelling. Like let's say it's like the Netflix show Dark, or it's what HBO has been doing lately with their kind of like their special 8 to 10 story releases that are really, really high quality. Not the ones that are laid out to be like a multi-season story like Westworld or whatever, but they have like limited series that are like 8 episodes long. And
you mean like The Watchmen? Or,
yeah, something like that. Like that is
or Queen's Gambit.
Yeah, exactly.
Or, you know,
that is like a story within itself that would be too rushed in 2 hours, but still... It kind of fits in between a traditional TV show and like a movie, and it's interesting. I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff coming out with fantastic actors and cinematography and everything. So, I mean, I don't know, maybe, I mean, nobody wants to give up their cash cows, and that's totally understandable. And it's very scary for everybody. But, it's really difficult to see where this all will go. And, but I'm for one, not the one who's going to shed a tear if one of the big studios goes under, to be honest.
Well, right. Let me ask you this, you know, as a, you know, we're all artists. So as an art form, like if you, you know, because you know, we talked about making our own shorts and all this kind of stuff. Put that side of your hat on. What if it's your film?
Yeah.
How would you feel? Like they just said, hey, you know what? We're just going to release it to home. So there's a couple implications here. It's one is the art form, which a lot of the directors are questioning, and the other is the back end.
Yeah.
So they've been promised a somewhat of a back end. And now they're not going to get that because obviously the revenue is going to be much lower. So it's also, you know, financially related.
Yeah.
Some of these companies like Legendary, who are financing some of these films. So, you know, just because HBO or Warner Brothers putting out a film doesn't mean that they're paying everything for it. So Legendary was helping to pay, some amount of money for the films. And I think it was Godzilla versus King Kong or something. And so now Legendary is thinking of filing a lawsuit to say, hey, we invested this money. You said it was going to come out in theaters, and now you're doing a simultaneous release, and it doesn't benefit us at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's really...
There's a lot of implications, but as an art form...
Definitely, yeah.
You know, as an art form, film art form, how would you feel if it was your film?
I mean, I'd feel a problem? Really shitty. I mean, like you said, it's... I say so easily, like, oh, I don't mind if a big company goes down, but of course, there's a lot of people employed. There's a lot of implications. Of what that means, but yeah, and as an artist, like let's say, I mean, there was the thing about Villeneuve said that he read about the HBO Max thing from the news, just like anybody else, and that's really not okay. I mean that.
Well, that's horrible. I mean, that's just like communicating with.
They should have really a discussion with all the stakeholders, right? Dune is one of the tentpole films next year, and I'm assuming Lana Wachowski? She probably also heard about it from the news,
but the people from
Legendary and everything. I mean, that needs to be a joint decision, and not just somebody. From the top, pulling the trigger, and then it's like, okay, this is what we do.
But I mean, that part of it, we don't really know what happened. And honestly, knowing, you know, I mean, Lana is a different kind of a filmmaker because she really tries to. I mean, she's just different, and I'm not sure that she really cares all that much about sort of. You know, the financial side of it. And I think Denis probably not either. I think they do, you know, for a lot of directors, they really are thinking, hey, is this the end, like, of this art form? Because watching it, it's like people looking at our art on an iPhone. And it drives me insane.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure it drives, you know, I mean, but it's like the difference between looking at it at a big monitor and really looking at it versus looking at it on an iPhone. It really is the difference in terms of the art form, right?
There is something there. There is something there. But I feel like it's not to the degree where... Mm. I mean, when I hear Nolan and Villeneuve complaining about this kind of stuff that, oh, you have to experience in the theater, and then, of course, other directors obviously don't care. Like Scorsese or Fincher or whatever. I mean, Fincher has been at the forefront of Netflix, right? With his multi-year deals and creating new forms of storytelling there, right from the beginning. I mean, I don't think the art form is such as dead. Like, storytelling will never die. It's just that it will evolve, right? And it needs to evolve for a new reality, for a new time, right? It can't always stay the same way it has for the last 100 years. And if you delude yourself that it will, then I can't help you. But I mean, I honestly find it a bit strange that these two directors like took such a strong stance, like especially Nolan. He's always about like, oh, you have to see it in cinema, blah, blah, blah. And honestly, like I tended to believe him before, but now I feel like after watching Tenet, I was like, well, of course he wants me to see in the cinema so I can't just turn it off and walk away. I just have to sit there through that. I mean, I would have to leave the cinema, fine, but I'm less likely to do that. But I'm like, watching Tenet at home again, it completely falls apart. It's like, there's nothing left. If you take the picture away, then there's nothing left. So is that why he wants me to sit in the theater? I mean, honestly, I don't know. I mean,
I get that you're coming from it from that point of view. For me, it's I'm looking at it from an artist's point of view, and I get that, hey, it sucks, and I get that it's not what I was expecting in terms of how to show my hard work of like 2+ years
right.
of dealing with all this stuff and to get it finally done and printed on film. It's like photography went digital. It was a change, you know? I mean, it's a different feel. It's a different, everything's different about it. And now you're changing the format again by just TV and the attention span of people who's got like half an hour attention span. And then they're probably like going to the bathroom and checking their phones.
Yeah.
You feel like your art form is really not being respected anymore. Maybe that's a part of
it. Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Of course. Of course that as well.
So, I mean, that's definitely something that, of course, people will have to make their whatever, this is just what's happening. So,
I mean, it's a changing landscape, right? It's like you can't insist that everything goes your way if a pandemic rages the planet. I'm like, sorry, you have to. You just can't force people to go to the theater. And I mean,
speaking of the pandemic,
evil me says, if you want me to go to the theater, make a good movie first, okay? And then we can talk again.
Yeah. Okay, well, okay, we're clear on that. But speaking on pandemic and film shoots since we're on film, I actually did watch this thing on Tom Cruise yelling at the crew for the pandemic, like to stay safe, and if they didn't, then he would be really upset. Did you actually listen to it?
No, I didn't. I just read the transcript. I didn't listen to it. He seemed very angry. Maybe we can fill in people what he said or what was the situation.
Well, I mean, the situation was, I think there was a part of the crew and he was just talking to that part of the crew that had done something. I mean, there was no specifics on what they did, but they did something against the rules.
The social distancing rules,
Social distancing and all that kind of stuff. And he went off and it was like F-bombs. And like, you got to stop that. And you're basically, putting in jeopardy also not only people's lives, but also, you might shut down the shoot, in which case a lot of people will lose their jobs.
Right.
And, there's going to be a lot of people, so don't be so selfish, that kind of thing. And it was a very, he was very, very upset. And I think my wife asked me a good question. Was that necessary? If your boss came to you with F-bombs, is that necessary?
Yeah.
But is the severity of it, maybe it is.
I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe, I mean, we don't know the whole story, right? Maybe he told them, like every day in the morning, like, okay, let's do it properly. Let's behave. Maybe he told the guys off like 5 times already and then it was finally enough the 6th time and he just went off. I can imagine that. I don't think, I mean, there's a lot of stories about Tom Cruise going around and mostly they're very positive that he's an incredibly nice guy to work with. What do I know, right? But but I can't imagine that he just went off just like that without anything happened before. Nobody happened to capture on the phone, right?
No, I absolutely was provoked.
But
I'm sure it was provoked.
Yeah. But I mean, generally about it is a tricky thing to shoot. I mean, we are always very concerned about the pre-production. That's when we do a lot of work. But then, and there's a lot of projects being done right now that are in pre-production. But then the question is always like, how do these projects then move onto the actual principal photography? I mean, it's going to be incredibly difficult. I mean, the Mission Impossible 7, which was the project in question here, they have already started in Italy, and then they had to shut down because I think a couple of people got infected or there was lockdown, and now they're starting again in the UK. And I think the same with like the Batman, where the actor, well, Robert Pattinson, also got COVID, and then they had to shut down the shoots. It's really, I mean, you have, and it's a burden that everybody has to be super careful. And the carelessness of one person can, yeah, put the jobs of everybody else on the line, because, I mean, once you can't shoot, then none of the crew gets paid. Or also the case that all these extra measures to make sure that everybody is safe and everybody follows the rules adds quite a bit of overhead to the production cost. And I think a lot of smaller productions where that is a significant amount compared to the entire budget, they might not even get off the ground until everybody or enough people are vaccinated, or at least there
doesn't. Yeah, smaller shots are gonna, they're gonna be tough. But I mean, I personally think, you know, this is just me, but I think that there are so many people out there who aren't taking this pandemic seriously. Oh, yeah. And now it's just, I mean, just the people, amount of people dying, it's a Pearl Harbor every day here.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And it's at some point, you have to ask yourself, is it really worth it, whatever you're going to do, other than stay at home? And I know people, I know it's tough. I know there's fatigue, but, you know, maybe it does warrant somebody being that upset saying, maybe.
To make
look,
a point,
man,
yeah.
you're jeopardizing lives, and you shouldn't be doing that, and livelihoods, and maybe that's enough of a reason to get that upset about.
Yeah.
So maybe. I mean, and like you said, I mean, I don't know the full story. I wasn't there, but we're just kind of reporters at this point, just saying, well, this is what I read. It's interesting to talk about because I think it's an interesting subject.
Yeah.
And that's it. You know, we don't need to belabor this anymore.
Oh, no.
Do you have anything
but
more
you
want to say?
It's interesting. And I think he has a good point, though. He has a good point. It's
yeah.
Even though it's tiring, you just have to kind of deal with it.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, right, we had, so there's not only HBO Max that was going crazy. Also kind of Disney announced in the investor call, I think nobody expected quite that much. And at that time point,
you know, yeah,
but yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. When you say that, it's like, I saw the video of Kevin Feige, right, to introduce all the stuff. And I thought, oh, you know, it's going to be 5 minutes. It was like half an hour. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah,
it
will take half an hour to just say all the names of all the projects.
But there was that many.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, are you kidding me?
But I guess it's like, it is true. I mean, it's I guess it was kind of like building confidence in the shareholders that like whatever we have seen of Disney Plus so far, which basically was mainly Mandalorian, right? In terms of dedicated content. And there was a lot of stuff that was kind of in production with all the extended Marvel Universe. But now it's really like, say, okay, this we are Disney, we're doing this, and we're going to do it like crazy. So there were like, I think like 10 Star Wars related projects, like animated shows, shows that were like kind of expanding on the backstories of even like side characters from some of the Star Wars story movies. And of course Obi-Wan is coming, and then the whole Marvel thing is like in complete insanity. The amount of movies and TV shows and everything that is coming is quite crazy. And then kind of like as a footnote, there was like I think there was like a bit of about Pixar, right, doing like a couple of new movies. And I didn't see. Was there anything about Indiana Jones? I don't know. I think they said they're making one.
You know, I got to be honest with you. I didn't watch the whole thing.
No, I didn't watch it. I just looked at the logos and just kind of get an idea of what is there. But it's quite crazy. I mean, It's I mean, really,
you
like,
know, on the yeah, one hand, yeah. I am excited to see what some of the people will do with these properties.
Yeah.
But man, it's, you know, and even personally for me, at some point, it's like, you know, how many Marvel films can you do? At some point, it all kind of becomes kind of the same.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, yeah.
And you just want to be able to do something that feels a little bit fresher.
Oh, I mean, you, from an artist perspective, personally. Right? From an artist perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely. I mean,
but content, it makes sense, right? I mean, it makes sense to do it.
Yeah, I guess so. Nobody's stopping them, right? It's supposed to be the main thing going forward, right? I mean, it really shows that it's like, okay, we don't really care about cinemas anymore. And with Disney, we can survive without the cinemas, right? That's kind of the thingy, because I think 80% is Disney Plus content.
Do you have Disney Plus?
I mean, it's not available here yet, but they're releasing it February. But I mean, the rollout all over the world is really, really, really slow. I mean, I think it's in the UK, US, and what, Australia? And now I heard that Singapore is like the first really like in Asia to get it, or really the first outside of the English-speaking world. I mean, Singapore to a large extent is English-speaking, but... that was quite surprising that they did that. And I guess it's a lot to do with the rights and everything. I mean, so far we had most of the Disney content is just available here through Netflix. But anyway, it was a big kind of show to say like, okay, like we don't care about cinemas almost. Like we don't need them. And of course, only really Disney can do that, right? So I mean, I don't know. That's the thing about the whole streaming thing. I mean, I'm not interested in any of the content. I mean, I really the Star Wars thing really showed to me what's wrong with this approach. Like, I mean, in the original movies, I feel like they are so rich and interesting because you can imagine a backstory for all these characters. They feel like they have their own culture. They have their own like mystery to them. And I mean, that's the same with like all the other stuff. Like even if you go back a few years to like Alien and what Ridley Scott did with Prometheus, right? I mean, those movies, I feel they live off the mystery that you just don't know and you have to imagine it. But now every little gap will be filled in with some sort of production. And like again, that one character from that Rogue One movie, now he gets his own show, and I'm like, do we really need that? Doesn't this kind of like take away from the richness of all this content? I mean, I'm saying this here like with everybody listening and probably nobody hiring me anymore, and but I mean, honestly, is that the best way? Just so they have like a character that is familiar to some people. Like I don't understand. Maybe I'm too old for that.
Yeah,
maybe
I mean,
it's just not we're not the target audience, obviously. But I mean, just purely when I look back at all these things like that I found interesting as a kid, and now everything is explained. There's no mystery left to explore.
I think I get what you're saying, and I actually agree to the point that, you know, it's like working on a painting and, you know, just zooming in infinitely and working in all the details.
Yeah, exactly.
When, you know, a stroke would have sufficed so that I could actually imagine what that was. And I think that, you know, I agree with that, you know, like some things aren't needed. But I think there's such a need to explain every damn thing and to make money, basically.
Yeah, of course. I mean, those projects,
you know, whatever we can.
Those projects will be the ones that hire us, right? So yeah, sorry.
Yeah, and honestly, I have to say that I was disappointed in the last Star Wars, think I quit. I think Episode 8. I basically after that I've stopped watching all Star Wars, and it hurt to do that because I love Star Wars.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
But it's just got to a point where I was like, this is not Star Wars anymore. I can't continue. It's just, I can't. And so, you know, Star Wars for me is, it's not ruined because I still live in the Episode 3, you know, 3.
Oh, the 4, 5, 6, you know, the old one, yeah.
Yeah, 4, 5, 6, sorry. Yeah, 4, 5, 6 is, I still live in that world.
And yeah.
I'm okay with
exactly
that.
Exactly, right. I mean, I also, I mean, I, the thing is, right, I love a good, like a good, story. Like, I love a good movie where a simple but effective story meets some really interesting visuals. And that's...
Yeah, and that's not...
Is that too much to ask? I don't know. Like, I love movies like Mad Max was amazing, right? And does it have much of a story? No, it doesn't, right? It doesn't have to be, like, Oscar-worthy, like, story material, whatever. But it's like I've stopped watching all Star Trek, all Star Wars, and I'm not watching any more Mandalorian or anything, because it just, I don't know, it's just not for me anymore. And it again, like you said, it hurts, right? It's like, oh, I grew up with this, and I want it to be good, I want it to be interesting, but it's just, I'm just looking at it, I'm just like, this is just a waste of time. And of course, okay, yeah, like 40, 50-year-old grumpy people are not the target audience. So if my kids, if the youngsters are getting people a lot out of that, then that's perfect. Then it's perfect. But I don't know. I'd wish once in a while I could watch one of those movies and not feel insulted, honestly. Sometimes I feel insulted. Look,
I mean, to each their own.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm sure that there will be some stories that are going to come out that are interesting and well done. And I'll give it its due chance, but honestly, I'm not holding my breath.
No, not anymore.
Let's put it that way. Yeah. And we'll leave that topic there, because we could go on all day on this rant, especially with Grumpy Jan here today. So I wanted to actually touch on this really quickly.
Yeah, sure.
And it's not really much on an opinion, but it's a series on Netflix called Alien Worlds.
Right.
And I think for most people or artists, it's actually really interesting. So the format is basically they're saying, okay, well, what if there was an alien world, and you know, what would the creatures do? What would the wildlife be? And then they'll flash back to some stuff on Earth to explain the point.
Right?
They'll talk about gravity and how that affects plants growing. So on the alien world, there might be, you know, much less gravity. And then they'll explain gravity to you as it pertains to on Earth and what it does. You know, it's actually quite interesting. And all the alien creatures and vegetation and the actual, you know, gravity and the mix, you know, makeup of the your surrounding, you know, the air and the oxygen, all that. They'll tell you that, and then they have like rendered creatures in there that they try to make it a real world that you could see.
Cool.
And I found it interesting in the sense that is really, you know, if you really want to world build and create alien worlds, you know, this is a cool way to look at something.
Cool.
And it gives you reason to make this plant that's growing 100 feet tall versus, you know, in no gravity versus something that's different. And I feel like a lot of people, when they're doing their art, it's just kind of like, well, let's just see where the brushstroke takes me, kind of thing. And it's much less like thinking about what is this world I'm creating and what happens in there. And playing God for a moment, like, okay, you know, how's the gravity? You know, what's in there? Is it water-based? You know, what happens? Once you have all that, then you can really create some rich world. So I think this is... could be a very interesting series to watch.
Cool. Yeah, I'll give it a go.
So
it sounds really
cool. I mean, I found it interesting. So
yeah,
feel free to check it out. Well,
it's kind of like a hard science fiction documentary kind of thing, right?
Kind of. Yeah.
Nice.
So that's that. What do you want to take on next?
Yeah. So we've talked a lot about I think all things about like movies and that kind of stuff, because a lot was happening, right? On the other side, we're still, I think, struggling with getting the hardware we want. And even like there seemed to be a lot of launches that kind of went sideways this year and also recently, right? So the launching of all the new graphics cards was met with, intense shortages, or I don't know, everybody's trigger happy to immediately buy everything. Same for like PlayStation 5. Nobody seems to be able to get their hands on it, and everything is picked up by scalpers and sold at five times the price. And most recently, I mean, not a hardware thing, but like a software thing, was the recent Cyberpunk game. Turned into a disaster, apparently. I mean, they made their money really quickly.
Sony pulled out.
But yeah, so many bugs, and it was delayed like three times. Already.
Oh, but do you know what happened just I think yesterday?
What was yesterday? No.
So Sony has refunded everybody. Sony no longer carries this.
Oh, Xbox, so you can't buy it anymore on the store. Xbox
as well.
You
cannot buy it on a con. Yeah, you cannot buy it on a console.
Jesus
anymore.
Christ.
And the people who bought it are refunded, and it is taking off their library.
But so who's refunding? Is it Sony and Microsoft, or is it CD Projekt Red? I wonder.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, I guess whoever sold it, I'm actually not sure. I mean, it wouldn't be Sony. I mean, Sony would get a cut, but yeah. I don't know.
So CD Projekt Red in the end must have given the refunds, right? I mean, that's pretty crazy. I mean, that's kind of unheard of. Even launches that went that were less than ideal, they were not bad to that degree, and they fixed the game shortly after. But I guess this really is like them saying like, okay, like I guess it was like we knew it was bad and we tried anyway, and
just context for people who are listening who may not know is that it's not just bugs that are happening here. It's sort of the quality on the PS whatever. It's just really bad.
Oh yeah, I saw the videos.
The bugs on top of the bug, it doesn't look right. Yeah. Because it's really a lot lower res, because that game needs it's hefty on resources. Yeah. So if you're playing it on PlayStation 4, forget it.
Wow.
And it's not something that they're making known at the beginning.
Oh, okay.
So right now, you know, when you get it, it's like it looks horrible and it plays horrible.
Yeah, that's
and so
almost impossible to fix, right? So they're saying like,
exactly.
Okay, like, sorry,
yeah.
All your PS4 and Xbox One owners.
And PS5, basically, just console is done with it for now. And the fact that they're saying that is meaning that something's really wrong.
And they're not
going
to fix it,
it's not,
I guess.
Like, and it's not something that's like, oh, a misunderstanding. It's really bad. So, but on PC, when you get it running right, yeah, it looks great. And it works great. But a PC is a very powerful machine.
Yeah, I mean, I guess PCs, it depends also what kind of PC you have then.
If you have an old graphics card, then forget it.
Yeah. But at least the thing is, right, with a PC, I think it's more widely understood that... you will have to have certain hardware specs, and it's not always gonna just work. You have to like dial in your settings to figure that out. But I think with a console, it's more like you download it and you expect it to work, right? That's kind of the expectation from the players, no?
Well, that's the whole point of a
console,
exactly. Right?
So and now you're telling me, oh, sorry, like you might not be able to, but yeah, it's a weird thing, and that was kind of
it's a bummer. But what's the bigger bummer is a lot of the employees are coming out to talk about, you know, CD Projekt Red about, you know, the working conditions.
Yeah, I heard that.
And the fact of the overtime and all this kind of stuff, when the game itself is trying to fight against that because that's sort of part of the storyline. And they're like, well, you know, we're working overtime like crazy over here and it's horrible.
It's still like that.
But, you know, I'm not there, so who knows?
Yeah, it's
right?
It's really crazy. You know. I mean, I hope that these guys can resolve it.
Because it does look good.
Yeah, I mean, I hope they don't have to go back into the crunch to fix all the problems now because that is not a good way to start the next year. But
it does look like quite an engrossing game that's different from what's
I mean, the thing is, right, it, like,
been happening.
Like such an open world massive project is always gonna have, I mean, it's really difficult to pull that off and but the thing is, right, we are kind of used to really high quality games from CD Projekt Red, so it's quite curious to see that this has kind of the launch has kind of bombed.
Yeah, I mean, the quality is still great. It's just not great on console.
Yeah, that's an interesting. I mean, launching it across so many platforms is also difficult. But anyways, that was that.
Enough of that. So one really big thing that happened is this Beeple. I'm sure everybody knows Beeple. He does his everydays, and he's been doing. He basically made $3.5 million in a weekend selling his crypto art.
Right? We have been hearing that more recent.
That's, you know, I mean, I don't know how much in detail we want to get it today, but I mean, maybe we'll do an episode on it. But I will say that
maybe
crypto art. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, we don't have to go into crazy detail, but I think we should. A lot of people heard the term, but they don't really know what that means and how. Basically, what does it mean, and how did he make the money, right? So,
right. I mean, a lot of people would think, well, you know, like, because what crypto art is really geared towards, at least from my research, geared towards collectors.
Yeah, investors.
And,
yeah.
You know, people, think of it as a online art gallery, digital art gallery.
But we're talking about fine art here, right? I mean, not necessarily, but it kind of has
any kind of art.
It has a similar connotation to collecting and investing in fine art, because I mean, the whole crypto art thing is about making it possible for people to own digital artwork that you are verifiably owner of it, right?
Right. But the here's the thing is artwork, digital artwork can mean anything.
Yeah,
and I've looked
on
there and it's like, okay. and it's, you know, I'm like, wow, okay. Great. But then, you know, you go to a museum and you see some art, you go, well, I could do that. My kid could do that.
Exactly.
You know,
it's like, the same kind of thing, right?
So same kind of thing. But the thing is, I'll just boil it down to the simplistic form is that basically what you're making is it could be a piece of art that's already been made, whatever. Mm. You have to register it on the blockchain so that it's trackable.
Yeah.
And if you buy that, then you own it.
Exactly.
You're the only person that can own that piece of art associated with that blockchain.
Exactly.
That's it.
Yeah.
So it's for you to collect, right? So people are saying, well, why can't I just screenshot and I'll have it, right? Yeah, but you won't own it.
Exactly. You can show to everybody that you own it. And
exactly.
It's only
so
that
you can't brag to your friends. You can't put it online, and you can't go to this online Decentraland and put up this piece of art that you made on a gallery. You can't do any of that. Because you don't own it. And if you own it, then you can do whatever you want. Of course, you know, it's, and there's a resale market.
Exactly.
So a lot of people
are
making
attached
money
to the
selling. Yeah.
Exactly.
So you can track the history of this thing. Like, say I sold it to you, you sold it to somebody else, and it keeps going up in price, which is like real art in galleries.
Exactly.
Then it's trackable. Otherwise, there's nothing to track. So that's that portion of it, right?
Right.
So what happened with Beeple? So Beeple's super smart because he did it in a way where he actually had a physical thing for you. And each one, he actually made a... And you can go to like Beeple's Instagram. You can see it. It's this plastic thing with a screen.
Yeah, like
it's looping.
Like a digital
that one
picture frame, yeah.
Right. And it's looping that one every day. And then in the back, there's like a QR code.
He's never hair sample. Yeah, of his.
So that's on the super collector's editions, right? That you get a big box with his hair sample and that thing. So, but it's really smart because now he's saying, well, okay, it's not just online, right? You can collect. It comes with this. So you're not just paying for something online. And that stuff just blew up.
Yeah. I wonder.
And one guy paid $700,000.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many variables to that, though, right? I mean, okay, he did that really smart thing about the physical thing. I wonder if that really made a difference to that degree, though, because there was also a lot of hype up before his release, and the one that exploded was actually his second drop. So the first one did make a splash, but not quite to that degree. And then he had like not like to saying he had help, but the launch was kind of hyped up by a lot of the investors and also by a lot of people that are very active that people know, like Tyler Winklevoss from like Facebook fame, and a lot of people that have like hundreds of thousands of followers on Twitter. It has been like really hyped up before. And then it kind of exploded. And I mean, the thing is, right, for me, the big thing that you need to understand is that this is not about like the quality necessarily, the technical quality of art. This is not about like, this doesn't look like a Michelangelo painting. Where's the skill in that? It has nothing to do with that. Just as like fine art, modern art, does not have any direct relation to the technical ability of the artist. It's more about like, what does the piece say? Who's the name attached to the piece?
Who's your audience?
Who's the audience? What's the timing like?
Is it a trend?
Is it a trend, right? There's so many things. Like even like the in which gallery the art is displayed has a huge implication on the value of the piece. So people comparing it to, I don't know, like master paintings, concept art or whatever, like illustrations, you can't. It's a completely different thing. And the reason why a lot of people buy this kind of stuff is maybe sometimes for collection, but I think mostly for investment purposes. This is investment vehicles, just like fine art is for a lot of people an investment vehicle, just like a stock, a bond, and this kind of stuff. And that's how you have to treat that. And I think a lot of people don't get that. I don't think people who jump into it right now, everybody can expect to be a Beeple and have that kind of success. It's not going to be possible.
Here's the thing with Beeple is that I'm sure that because he did it through Nifty Gateway. Mm. So this one site, treat it as a gallery, mm-hmm. right? Think of it as a gallery, just Nifty Gateway. So, and I read, I've listened to maybe all the stuff from Nifty Gateway, you know, that have been talking about how they are and what they do. And I'll tell you that one thing is that Beeple has like 1 million followers on Instagram.
Exactly.
So they're looking at that going, look, if we even just, you know, that is pedigree, right? Like if you got nobody, you can still be a part of them, but it's not going to be, you know, Beeple has built something. Yeah. And he's leveraging it, all the whole power to him. Mm. But they are also helping him,
of course,
come up with ideas on what to drop, how to drop.
Yeah, exactly.
What's the best way to do this? Because, I mean, I got to say, I mean, what he's doing is also not an easy thing.
Oh, no.
Like, Beeple is, you know, like, he's actually having these physical things. I mean, it takes planning. Mm. It takes thought. It takes a lot of execution, especially in these pandemic times. Yeah. So, I mean, I all the more power to him. But the thing is, you have to have a certain amount of popularity to engage in it. And you know, I even tried to apply just to see, you know, what their question is. And basically, they're asking you, are you a fine artist? And are you doing this full time? Mm. What is your goal as an artist? Mm. They don't want you working sort of 10 jobs. Mm. I mean, they want, if they're gonna represent you, they want you to do work as an artist. Yeah. It's the same as a museum. Not a museum, but like an art gallery. So just treat it like that. And you have to treat that part. Because I'm sure a lot of people listening are going, hey, maybe I can do that. Because I was thinking.
Yeah, of course.
I'll say, I can get part of the pie. But you have to build that part of the pie. And you have to ask yourself, do you really want to stop client work and do art?
Yeah. Yeah,
that is a question.
It's an interesting.
Right?
I mean, it's really like a new thing, right? Completely. I mean, it's a completely new kind of item, a way to approach art. And I mean, now it's like they do it mainly for like visual stuff. But I'm wondering if it will extend to like other kind of things as well, like I don't know, AR, VR, music. I don't know how you could do it, but I wonder where else this is going now that there's a way to actually have a verifiable, like non-interchangeable digital original, right? And I mean, everybody kind of has heard of like cryptocurrencies and that kind of thing. But I think it's not quite mainstream yet that everybody has like a coin wallet or whatever and has some what is it called, Ethereum or Bitcoin to use, right?
There's a whole bunch of them.
Yeah, exactly, right? So I wonder, it's an interesting field to look at and to see how this develops, right? And what kind of opportunities there will be for digital artists like us, right? So it's
cool. I mean, so for those of you who are really, if this sparks an interest in you and you want us to do an episode and dive deeper into this, then leave a comment and let us know. Yeah. Because, I mean, the truth is, you know, we'll, you know, maybe a lot of times when we come on these news, you know, there's something that hits there for a bigger topic. And I know that this crypto art definitely, I mean, I really did a lot of research and I'm still scratching the surface trying to understand exactly how and what it is. But now I have a better grasp of it. So
yeah, it's quite an abstract topic, right?
You know.
Anyway, yeah. I think this is kind of like the bigger things that kind of happened in December. But we also said we wanted to do a little bit of a just kind of like a not a review, that is, would take too long, but just kind of like, okay, how has 2020 been for everyone, for you, right? Like, what is the big things you learned? What you want me to go first?
Yeah,
go. Yeah. I don't. 2020 was, it felt like a long, but at the same time also short year. I don't know. There was, I think in the beginning it was kind of nobody, I think, thought the pandemic was going to be that long, right? And surprisingly, I mean, for us freelancers, for myself included, nothing much changed because, I mean, we're at home anyway and we do our work remotely. And it was more like, it felt more like, hey, we prepared for this all our careers for this moment to happen in a way. And then, I mean, for myself as well, like there was never a moment where I was out of work. It was strangely the most productive, busiest year I ever had, which was quite weird. And I mean, I have friends who like out of job for a long time. Not only artist friends, but I mean, I know someone who's a pilot or like people who have whose business runs a lot on physical interaction, right? And they have been, it was really devastating for them, right? And I was always like, this is really weird, but I mean, I'm busier than ever. So I really wasn't sure what to think about this whole thing, right? I mean, it was also a bit tough, of course, because there was like lockdown, kids were not in school, and it kind of throws around your entire schedule. And I guess it led to a lot of soul searching and trying to, I don't know, focus more on health, maybe. Like, okay, like this virus is going around, maybe you need to really make sure that, I mean, you and your entire family like are really healthy. I think most of all, though, it was again kind of a reminder for myself, just to wrap it up, to say that I really need to listen a lot more to kind of what your body and your mind are saying, I think, and take note of that a lot earlier than just when things are way too late again. So it kind of I guess brings us back to the whole burnout episode we did. And of course, a big thing was that we launched a podcast, right? That was quite quite a big thing. For us at least. So yeah, I think I feel like I can go into 2021 a lot calmer, a lot more organized maybe, and less actually, like in a way a bit less worried about what's gonna come. Because I mean, honestly, the pandemic thing and everything, it's really out of our hands. Like we can do our part in keeping us and our family safe. But in terms of which direction this whole pandemic will take, it's really not up to us. It's kind of like a reminder, like you can't control everything and you need to just take care of the things that you can control. So I feel like my outlook is
anything you want to do next year?
Oh, there's a lot of things I want to do. I think if anything, I want to work less. Want to read more books, and I have a couple of really projects that I want to do myself that I have been putting off again and again in favor of client projects and stuff like that. So I want to really tackle those. They're probably made a little bit more difficult through the pandemic because they involve actually going out and shooting stuff. But there will be a way. There will be a way to do all of this. And I'd be happy if at the end of next year I have done at least something. So I don't know. We'll see.
We'll keep you to it.
Yeah. I'll keep you to it. Yeah. Send me a reminder. How about yourself? What was the last week like? Last week, the last year like?
Yeah, I mean, it's been an interesting year, you know, like everybody else. But I think for me, it was really a lot of growth, I would say, in terms of getting more time for myself, being on the right projects, being on the wrong projects, and really learning something that, hey, how do I want to proceed with my life so that I can make the future next year count. So I don't want to sign on to any more projects where I'm not asking the right questions. And, you know, I feel like working on the wrong projects can really burn you out, or the wrong people can really burn you out. And vice versa, when you work with the right people, it can really invigorate you. And I really think that I'm past the threshold of being afraid financially. And more like, you know what? I got to work with the right people. And I think I learned that is one of the big lessons I've learned this year. And really meeting the right people, you know, us doing this podcast has been great because it's, you know, it's a release, you know, to talk about a lot of these things that we have bottled in, you know, being able to help, hopefully. But I think, you know, it's been a lot of growth for me. And I think, you know, I'm actually... you know, doing some personal work, and you know, I'll have stuff coming out, and it'll be just good to do that and do work that's a little different than what I'm normally used to. Cool. I mean, even signed up for a Twitter
thing. Oh my god!
But it's just completely like I'm like looking at it, going, do I really want to do this? But you know, regardless, I think that you know, it's been a. You know, the pandemic has been a really crappy thing, but at the same time, I've learned to do a lot. I've changed my lifestyle completely, and because of the pandemic, and you know, in America, it's really bad. So basically, for the last 9 months, I have not hung out with a friend.
Right. Yeah, that's tough.
But you know, I mean, I have my wife, but I mean, but at the same time, I realized that I'm actually okay with that. I have connected with them on.
Yeah.
You know, on Zoom or whatever, but of course I prefer to see them. But at the same time, I feel like I'm doing my duty to, to not spread stuff.
Right.
And so I feel like I'm doing the right thing. And it's not a goodbye. It's just like, you know, we'll see each other soon. Yeah, you know, yeah. Kind of thing. But I just feel like I've grown a lot. And I'm going to make more decisions because I've been looking at my health and all that kind of stuff. I want to make more decisions for my mental health.
Mm.
So for me, the biggest thing is just don't work with the wrong people.
Mm.
And if it's really the wrong people and project, leave.
Yeah.
Go. Because it's not worth getting yourself into that stress situation where you're unhappy and it causes you mental anguish. Yeah, it's just no point to it. You know, so I learned something this year, and hopefully I can bring it to the new year and really
we all can do that, right? So maybe a good thing would be, I mean, we have been, since we started this podcast, we've been receiving a lot of great feedback, a lot of helpful feedback, a lot of very interesting personal stories from people who said that the stories we tell, the info we give, has really helped them to gain more confidence or figure out what to do next. And if you want to, please share your stories, what you have learned in 2020, what you have realized, and what your plans are for the new year. Maybe you have some New Year's resolutions or bigger plans even. Please let us know. And thank you again for all the support in 2020, and we hope we'll see you guys also tuning into next year. And again, if you enjoyed this episode, like, comment, and subscribe. And I hope you all have some quiet, nice times, if you can, with your families and your friends. Okay, we'll be signing off.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Merry Christmas, and we'll talk to you guys soon. Bye.
Bye.